Syria, with the help of the Syrian government, with Iraq. And even we can see that it could be analytically discussed that we had Mr. Kazemi Ghomi just recently in Pakistan. It seems that even the today attack was something that was discussed with the Pakistani government.
We are out of time. I'm sorry for jumping it. Let me thank my guests, Amir Rezaei Ghulamzadeh in Tehran, Elijah Magner in Brussels. I've been your host, Behrouz Najafinal. See you next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here, we enlighten you with the Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzad Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'nin wa ma tatlu وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Quran, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth, or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Yemeni army says it targeted an American ship in the Gulf of Aden with appropriate naval missiles in support of Palestinians in Gaza. Iraqi Prime Minister once again calls for the withdrawal of U.S. forces from his country, saying it's crucial for Iraq's security and stability. UN rights expert slams Israel's measures in Gaza as a violation of international law, calling them highly illegal and unlawful. The Yemeni army says it targeted an American ship in the Gulf of Aden in response to U.S.-UK strikes on the Arab country.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against an American ship Kame Ranger in the Gulf of Aden with several appropriate naval missiles, resulting in direct hits.
Tariq described as inevitable Yemen's retaliation for the aggression by the U.S. and United Kingdom. He added that any new strike on Yemen will not go unanswered or unpunished. U.S. has confirmed the attack on its ship. The Pentagon says it was a third attack by the Yemenis this week on U.S.-owned vessels in and around the Red Sea. That's a crucial lane for international trade, where tensions have been spiking over the last 2 months. Yemen's been attacking Israeli-linked ships in retaliation for the regime's campaign of genocide in Gaza. Tensions in the Red Sea have escalated further in the past week, after the U.S. and U.K. began airstrikes on Yemen, citing what they call threats to international shipping. Political commentator Hussein al-Bukhaiti joined us earlier from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. He says the fact that Yemeni army has attacked two U.S. ships in recent days after Washington designated Ansarullah as a terrorist organization is a clear sign anti-Israeli operations will intensify and soon include U.K. ships.
Designation of the United States here in Yemen, they don't care about that, but they are honored to have that relisting as a terrorist organization because we know, and as Sayyid Abdul Malik have said, United States is just the face of the crime. United States is one of the country that have destroyed, they have destruction wherever they go. So we are honored to be designated as terrorist, because as always they say, one man terrorist is another man freedom fighter. And I just want to add that there are three ships that United States owned ship that has been targeted. Two of them was after this relisting of Ansarullah as a terrorist organization, and is a clear message that here in Yemen they actually will not stop their attack, but they will continue their attack against Israeli-linked ship or Israeli-owned ship or ships going toward Israel. And Sayyid Abdul Malik have said today that as well, British ship will come under attack. And as Yahya Sari'i, the spokesperson of Yemeni army, have said in his statement that the retaliation of the attack on Yemen by the United States and UK, it will and it's still to come.
Iraqi Prime Minister has reiterated his government's opposition to presence of U.S. forces in the country. Mohammad Shia al-Sudani says that American troops must leave as Daesh is no longer a threat to Iraq.
The reasons for the presence of coalition's forces were to confront Daesh. Today, the security situation, to the testimony of all specialists in Iraq and France, Daesh does not pose a threat to the Iraqi state. Today, after the repercussions and attacks on the Iraqi security headquarters, we have the right to start this dialogue immediately in order to reach an agreement on arranging a timetable for the end of the mission of international advisors.
Sudani was addressing a panel discussion at the World Economic Forum in the Swiss city of Davos. He said ending U.S. military presence is crucial for Iraq's security and stability. His remarks came as U.S. bases in Iraq have repeatedly been attacked by Iraqi resistance groups over Washington's support for Israeli genocide in Gaza. In response, U.S. military has launched attacks on Iraq's popular mobilization units, killing a number of their members. The Iraqi government has slammed U.S. attacks as a violation of the country's sovereignty. Last year, Sudani vowed before the Iraqi parliament to put an end to the presence of U.S. military in the country. Political commentator Christopher Helali has shared his views on the issue with us. He says U.S. insistence on maintaining a military presence in Iraq is actually aimed at being close to Iran to shore up anti-Iran terror groups.
Everywhere the U.S. goes, they bring with them destruction, coup d'etats, color revolutions, and so on and so forth. The main idea here for us to analyze is why the U.S. has stayed after all of these years since the defeat of Daesh. And we recognize and we can understand that the reason isn't about Daesh, the reason isn't about Iraq, the reason is ultimately about Iran. The reason is to have a military position close enough to the Islamic Republic of Iran, where the United States can continue to project its power. And of course, we know from the former National Security Advisor, John Bolton, that the United States has been funneling arms and equipment to various terrorist entities across the border into Iran, and has been funding and training and promoting terrorist organizations that seek to overthrow the Islamic Republic, like the terrorist organization, the Mujahideen e Khalq in Albania. So, of course, we recognize that the U.S. being there is one to project its aims at Tehran. It has nothing to do with anybody else in the region.
A U.S. military drone has been shot down in northern Iraq while flying close to the Iranian border. According to early reports, MQ-9 Reaper drone was shot down near the Iraqi city of Mukhdadiyya in Diyala province. Unmanned aerial vehicle reportedly taken off from U.S. Air Force's Ali Asalam base in Kuwait. The development came amid heightened tensions and simmering anti-American sentiments across the region. During recent months, Iraqi resistance groups have carried out attacks on American bases, both in Iraq and neighboring Syria, on an almost daily basis. Attacks have taken place in response to U.S. support for the Israeli regime's campaign of genocide in Gaza. Earlier this week, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps fired a barrage of missiles at an espionage center of the Israeli spy agency, the Mossad, in Iraq's Kurdistan region. And one of those killed in that operation was a Kurdish multimillionaire, oil tycoon Peshraw Majid Aghadizai. And now photos have obtained by Press TV have established Mossad connections and now how he was a vital cog and Israeli spy agency operations in Iraq's Kurdistan, mainly against Iran. One of the photos shows Dizai, who had close ties with the Mossad, with Zionist rabbi at an event held to celebrate the Jewish festival of Yom Kippur. Another photo shows him besides a Mossad agent, Ilan Nisim, as well as Hossein Yazdan Panah, commander of an anti-Iran terror group. According to informed sources, Ilan was a key Mossad officer who coordinated agency's operations in Iran and Iraqi Kurdistan. The sources say Ilan was also killed in the IRGC attack, along with four other members of his espionage team. Dizai has made a fortune from illegal exports of Iraqi oil to the Tel Aviv regime. He also headed the Falcon Group conglomerate with business interests in security, oil, gas, construction, and agriculture. 105 days into Israeli war in Gaza Strip, and the regime continues with its carpet bombing campaign across the besieged territory. Death toll has now passed 24,600, with nearly 62,000 Palestinians wounded. Now, lately, Israel stepped up its strikes in the southern areas of Gaza. Gaza's health ministry says occupations committed 15 massacres against families in Gaza, killing 172 people in just one day. Ministry says number of victims are still under rubble and in blocked streets that ambulance crews and civil defense personnel cannot reach. This as communications and internet services are completely cut off in wide areas of Gaza for a seventh time since October 7th. Highly illegal, highly unlawful, that's how UN rights experts describe measures taken by the Israeli regime in Gaza. UN Special Rapporteur on Occupied Palestine slammed relentless Israeli bombardment of highly crowded areas of Gaza as a grave violation of international law. Francesca Albanese said the regime used over 6,000 bombs during the first 2 weeks of its aggression alone. She added, a good number of Gaza's hospitals have been closed, bombed, or taken over by Israel. UN officials said number of kids who lose one or two limbs in Gaza every day is shocking. Albanese said during the first 2 months of the Israeli onslaught, 1,000 kids underwent amputations without anesthesia, describing it as a monstrosity. Israel is currently facing a genocide case at the International Court of Justice for crimes it's committed in Gaza. International human rights lawyer John Philpott says Israel is an occupying power and the regime's Western-backed claim to having a right to self-defense has no place in international law.
I think it's important to understand the right of self-defense of Israel does not exist. Israel is an occupying power of Gaza, and it has to defend the rights of the people living in Gaza, has to defend their right to education, to food, to water, and all the human rights that every human being wants, education. Israel has the obligation under the Fourth Geneva Convention. Gaza is part of Israel in the sense it's occupied by Israel, and Israel has an obligation to defend and protect these 2.2 million, I think it is, people of all their human rights, education, and I'm not going to repeat it because I just stated that. So this Western concept, puppeted by even by Justin Trudeau of Canada, Israel's a right to defend itself, is nonsense in law.
The World Health Organization's emergency medical team coordinator, Sean Casey, has described the dire conditions of remaining hospitals in the Gaza Strip, saying the patients are waiting to die due to extreme shortages of staff and medicine.
I saw evidence again and again of the simultaneous humanitarian catastrophe that's unfolding. We see it every day in Gaza, getting worse and worse, and the collapse of the health system day by day, with hospitals closing, health workers fleeing, casualties continuing to stream in, lack of access to medicines and medical supplies, a lack of access to fuel to run hospital generators, to keep the lights on, to keep the machines running. Basically, the whole hospital was filled with displaced persons, thousands of them, reportedly tens of thousands of them, living in the operating theaters, living in the corridors, living in the stairs. And the emergency department, seeing hundreds of patients a day, mostly trauma, with only a handful, literally five or six doctors or nurses to care for all of those people. Patients on the floor, so many that you could barely move without stepping on somebody's hands or feet. In Al-Ahli Hospital, also in the north, I saw patients who were lying on church pews, basically waiting to die, in a hospital that had no fuel, no power, no water, very little in the way of medical supplies, and only a handful of staff remaining to take care of them.
Palestinian Investment Fund Chairman Mohammed Mustafa has called for more humanitarian efforts in Gaza, saying that more people are likely to die of hunger and famine than the ongoing war. He was speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
The catastrophe and the humanitarian impact of this war is much bigger than 2014, unfortunately. We cannot avoid but feel very bad for the families and the people of Palestine for the repeated wars against them. And I hope this time around will be the last time. I think the humanitarian effort is a priority. And I think that war has to stop. I think the military action has got to stop very quickly. There's no need for anybody to build their political careers at the expense of more Palestinian people. So it's time to be bold. I think the international community, all the stakeholders, which we all appreciate, have to move and move fast and boldly to stop this aggression. Unfortunately, the devastation is huge. We have, if not, we are not careful, maybe more people will be killed or die from hunger and famine than the war itself. So we don't want to wait long to see that happening. I think the time to move is now.
Like many countries around the world, Austrians have also held rallies to express solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. People have taken to the streets defying a ban on such demonstrations. Our correspondent in Vienna has asked some Austrians about media bias and the lack of coverage of pro-Palestine voices.
Since I am mainly influenced by Austrian television, I think it is very one-sided. I read a lot of international newspapers, and the reporting there is entirely different than on Austrian television. Namely, it is not as one-sided. In Austria, there is much reporting from Israel's perspective, and the situation in the Gaza Strip is only featured in very few media outlets. Above all, there is hardly any information about what the civilian population in Gaza is doing.
When you come in maybe Austria, it's a bit biased, yeah. Also, the main source where you can, nowadays, where you can find the truth is through social media, because now you have access to information from there also, and people see the truth, and you can see the murder of the child, the children in Gaza, what you cannot see in the media. The decision taken in UN also that are hiding for people, and you can see it through social media. That is my opinion.
I miss the media coverage of the background to the conflict, the history, the connections. Horrible images are shown enough, but not enough information is given to the people about what led to the war and the attacks.
In the U.S., the election season is already here, but with far more dread than hope. Many believe that there will be even more turmoil this November than back in 2020, with widespread concerns about election-related violence. That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely, thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty wise.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Homeland Security Department says Texas denied federal agents access to a stretch of border where they were trying to rescue three migrants who drowned in the Rio Grande River on the border between the United States and Mexico. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A woman and two children drowned in the Rio Grande River on Friday, 12th of January, while trying to enter the United States near a section of the southern border where Texas National Guard soldiers have prevented federal Border Patrol agents from processing and rescuing migrants. Federal officials and a Texas congressman said National Guard soldiers deployed by Texas's Republican Governor Greg Abbott did not allow Border Patrol agents to attempt to rescue the migrants in the Rio Grande River. Earlier this week, Texas National Guard soldiers abruptly seized control of the public park in Eagle Pass, Texas, that Border Patrol has been using to hold migrants, marking the latest escalation in an intensifying political and legal feud between Texas Governor Greg Abbott and U.S. President Joe Biden over U.S. border policy. On Friday night, 12th of January, Border Patrol identified six migrants in the Rio Grande River who were in distress near the park known as Shelby Park. Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar said in a statement on Saturday, 13th of January, federal agents unsuccessfully attempted to contact Texas state officials about the emergency by phone. Then when Border Patrol agents went to the park and asked to be allowed to render aid to the migrants, they were denied entry, according to Congressman Henry Cuellar. Texas Military Department soldiers stated they would not grant access to the migrants even in the event of an emergency, and that they would send a soldier to investigate the situation, Cuellar said, noting that Mexican officials recovered three bodies from the Rio Grande River on Saturday. This is a tragedy, and the state bears responsibility, he added. A U.S. Customs and Border Protection official who requested anonymity because they were not authorized to speak to the media said Henry Cuellar's description of the events was accurate. In a statement on Saturday, the Department of Homeland Security said Texas officials obstructed Border Patrol agents' attempts to rescue the migrants on Friday. Tragically, a woman and two children drowned last night in the Shelby Park area of Eagle Pass, Texas, which was commandeered by the state of Texas earlier this week, the department said. In responding to a distress call from the Mexican government, Border Patrol agents were physically barred by Texas officials from entering the area. White House spokesperson Angelo Fernandez-Hernandez said Texas soldiers blocked U.S. patrol agents from attempting to provide emergency assistance to the migrants. While we continue to gather facts about the circumstances of this tragic death, one thing is clear. Governor Greg Abbott's political stunts are cruel, inhumane, and dangerous, Fernandez-Hernandez added. The Texas Military Department, which oversees the state National Guard, confirmed it was contacted by Border Patrol agents on Friday night in reference to a migrant distress situation. It said one of the units actively searched the Rio Grande River with lights and night vision equipment, but found no migrants in distress or any bodies. The state National Guard soldiers ended their search after detecting Mexican officials responding to an incident on the Mexico side of the border, the Texas Military Department added. According to the department, Border Patrol agents said Mexican authorities did not need help. The Texas Military Department maintains water rescue equipment and actively works with local emergency services to aid migrants needing medical care, the department said in a statement on Saturday, 13th of January. The Texas National Guard took control of Shelby Park late on Wednesday, saying it was an operation designed to deter illegal crossings by migrants into Texas. The drastic move alarmed local officials in Eagle Pass, who said they did not approve it, as well as the federal government, which alerted the Supreme Court of Texas actions overnight on Thursday. Federal officials said Texas had used armed soldiers, vehicles, and fences to physically block Border Patrol agents and at least one federal National Guard soldier from accessing roughly 2.5 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. One of the concerns raised by federal officials in a filing before the Supreme Court was that Texas's actions would prevent Border Patrol agents from helping migrants in distress. On Saturday, the Department of Homeland Security called on Texas officials to relent. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. Homeland Security Department said on Saturday, 13th of January, that Texas denied federal agents access to a stretch of border when they were trying to rescue three migrants who drowned in the Rio Grande River. The federal government's account came hours after U.S. Representative Henry Cuellar said Texas Military Department and Texas National Guard did not grant access to Border Patrol agents to save the migrants on Friday night, 12th of January. Mexican authorities recovered the bodies of a woman and two children on Saturday, 13th of January, across the border from Eagle Pass, Texas. "This is a tragedy and the state bears responsibility," said Representative Henry Cuellar, the top Democrat on the U.S. Appropriations Committee's Subcommittee for Homeland Security. Homeland Security echoed Representative Henry Cuellar about what had happened, saying the migrants drowned in the Shelby Park area of Eagle Pass. In a court filing to the U.S. Supreme Court on Saturday, Texas acknowledged seizing the city park on the border, but said the federal government had mischaracterized its actions and it was trying to resolve any disputes over access. In responding to a distress call from the Mexican government, Border Patrol agents were physically barred by Texas officials from entering the park, Homeland Security said in a statement. "The Texas governor's policies are cruel, dangerous, and inhumane, and Texas's blatant disregard for federal authority over immigration poses grave risks." The Republican governor of Texas, Greg Abbott's office, referred questions about the drowning of the migrants in Rio Grande River to the Texas Military Department. On Friday, 12th of January, the Justice Department told the U.S. Supreme Court that Texas had taken control of Shelby Park and were not letting Border Patrol agents to enter the park. The park lies in a major corridor for migrants entering illegally from Mexico into the United States and is the center of Greg Abbott's aggressive attempts to stop them, known as Operation Lone Star. Migrants are periodically swept away to their deaths by the currents of the Rio Grande River.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream.
On the 27th of December 2008, the Israeli occupation began one of its many military aggressions against the Gaza Strip with an operation called Cast Lead, while the Palestinian resistance chose to call it the Battle of Al-Furqan, and it lasted about 23 days, ending on January 19, 2009, now known as the Day of Gaza. The Islamic Republic of Iran commemorates the Day of Gaza every year as the symbol of resistance of Palestinians against the Zionist regime. This year, the Day of Gaza will have a very special impact given the genocide Gaza is still currently living through as Zionist Israel gets away with terrorism and aggression yet again. The 2008-2009 war resulted back then in at least 1,500 martyrs, including 300 children, and massive destruction of Gaza's infrastructure. Many Palestinian civilians were killed in attacks by high-precision weapons, which were capable of pinpoint strikes and can hit within a meter of their targets, and which have exceptionally good optics, allowing those carrying out or directing the strikes to see the targets in detail. Hence, as anticipated, Zionist Israel deliberately targeted civilians. Despite its end and the passage of years, the Israeli entity leaders were never held accountable and punished for their crimes against the Gaza Strip and its residents, despite international and human rights organizations acknowledging in their reports the occurrence of war crimes against civilians. Which is why, ladies and gents, Zionist Israel opted to continue its genocide against Gaza again in 2012, Pillar of Defense War, named Shale Stones by the Resistance. Then in 2014, Protective Edge War, named Consumed Storm by the Resistance. Then in 2018 and 2019, and Saif al-Quds 2021, and the Unified Battlefield 2022, and last but ever so not least, Al-Aqsa Flood 2023, the largest, most horrifying ongoing genocide ever to be witnessed in the 21st century, in which Zionist Israel has so far killed 23,000 civilians, 7,000 of whom are children. Let us clear the air once and for all. No, it did not start on October 7. Gaza has been under the most severe siege by Zionist militias over the past two decades, and Tel Aviv, under various pretexts, took anti-human measures, such as cutting off contact with other areas, preventing people from fishing and importing fuel, food, and medicine, or is imposing widespread military aggression against Gazans. Back in 2008, the Zionist regime, which has always been known for break promise and child killing since the establishment of its aggressive regime, launched massive airstrikes on Gaza on December 27 and used 64 fighter jets and military helicopters, and in its first hours, more than 100 tons of missiles and bombs were fired at Gaza. This time, in 2023, during the first 5 days of the Al-Aqsa flood in Gaza, over 1,000 martyrs rose and more than 5,000 were injured. Today, more Palestinians were killed and more properties were destroyed in the 100-day Zionist genocidal war than in any previous Israeli offensive. This makes the Day of Gaza this year a monumental one. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. January 19 marks Gaza Day in Iran, a day in which Iranians voice their support for the resistance of the people of the Gaza Strip against the Israeli entity hostilities. Day of Gaza in Iran commemorates the resistance of the brave Palestinian people during the 22 days of the Zionist regime's aggression on the Gaza Strip in 2008-2009. Now, this year, Gaza Day has a special resonance, given the ongoing genocide in Gaza for 100 days now, taking the lives of at least 23,000 civilians, 7,000 of whom are children under the age of 14. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Saleh Abu Azzeh, Palestinian political commentator. Thanks a million for being with us, Mr. Saleh. Now, as we commemorate Day of Gaza, announced by the Islamic Republic of Iran on January 19, remembering the massacres committed by the Zionist entity back in 2009, we witness today the genocide of the century like no other. Right there in the same space in Gaza, as we enter, actually we surpassed 100 days of the Zionist aggression already. It's a psychotic war of genocide against the Palestinian people. But how does remembering massacres that happened 2009 to what is happening today, I mean, what we witness today is a complete genocidal act. How does remembering the past help?
There is no doubt that the acts of genocide committed by the Israeli occupation against the Palestinian people have not ceased since 1948. Every year witnesses a series of massacres perpetrated by Israeli forces, settlers, and gangs against the Palestinian people. 2009 specifically marked the first assault on Gaza, starting at the end of 2008 and extending into the beginning of 2009. This attack followed the liberation of Gaza in 2005 and was one of the most brutal assaults witnessed in the post-liberation period. The occupation did not stop at the 2008-2009 assault. It continued throughout the previous 15 years with attacks occurring nearly every year or every 2 years, demonstrating brutal aggression against Gaza. Without a doubt, remembering 2009, we face a significant increase in Palestinian casualties at the hands of the Zionist American death machine. Perhaps the main difference, in addition to the increased casualties compared to 2009, is that the attacks in 2009, 2012, and 2014 had Israeli entity origins overall. As for the year 2023-2024, this prolonged aggression, lasting for more than 100 days, is a Zionist American-British assault. This implies that Zionist Israel acts as an executive tool for the United States and to some extent for the Arabs receiving support in various forms, especially considering that the missiles and projectiles launched at Gaza are predominantly American, British, and European.
Well, Mr. Saleh, after the 2009 war, just like you said, Gaza suffered more Zionist wars in 2012, in 2014, 18, 19, 21 with Saif al-Quds, and 22, and now 23, 24 as well. However, Gaza remains steadfast. The resistance proves day after day that it is still strong and it does still have the upper hand in the field in Gaza. But 23,000 human losses, that's not counting those still under the rubble. How is that resilience still effective inside of Gaza?
We must remember the numbers well. We witnessed 100,000 victims in the Gaza Strip, including martyrs, missing persons, and the wounded. When we talk about 100 days, it means we are talking about 1,000 victims daily at the hands of the Israeli entity death machine against the Palestinian people. This is sufficient evidence that Zionist Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people. The resilience of the resistance and the Palestinian people can be attributed to several factors. Firstly, the Palestinian people's faith in their cause, the justice of this issue, and the belief that a price must be paid for the liberation of the land, people, and Palestinian sanctities. Secondly, we cannot ignore the support standing beside the Palestinian people, whether from the Islamic Republic or the resistance axis in general. In this war, we observe the diplomatic, political, military, and security efforts unified in support of the Palestinian cause by the resistance axis led by the Islamic Republic of Iran. We witnessed the actions of the Islamic resistance in Iraq and the Northern Front ignited by Hezbollah the following day. We also saw the significant role played by the armed forces in Yemen, supported by overwhelming popular support from all segments of the Yemeni people. All of this undoubtedly strengthens the steadfastness of the Palestinian people, the conviction of the Palestinian that the catastrophe in 1948 and the defeat in 1967 will not be repeated and that they will remain resilient on this land regardless of the cost, increases the cost of steadfastness to prevent displacement. In a final note, there is a significant alignment between Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian people. The majority overwhelmingly support the actions of the Palestinian resistance, considering themselves a nurturing environment for this resistance. They must persevere until the resistance withstands aggression and fulfills its duties against Zionist Israeli attacks on the Palestinian people.
Well, it gets us to the support that the Palestinian people should get and are getting from certain friends like the Islamic Republic of Iran, who intentionally named January 19 the Day of Gaza because of its unconditional support to all the resistance in the region and specifically the Palestinian resistance itself. Despite the fact that it is being named by the Western media and the Zionist entity that Iran is behind the October 7 attacks, Iran is behind the closure of the Red Sea in front of the shipments or the ships, the Zionist ships, or any shipments going to the Zionist entity. What help does commemorating past massacres do in such cases?
Firstly, there is no doubt that there are clear stances from the Islamic Republic of Iran, represented by Supreme Leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in addition to the Iranian leadership and the Iranian people's popular stance. Thus, the Islamic Republic always stands by the Palestinian cause and supports it on all levels. But should any state be truly blamed for standing by the victim, or should the blame fall on those siding with the oppressor, the killer, and the criminal committing genocide? October 7th was a genuine Palestinian reaction to all the massacres and genocide committed by Zionist Israel against the Palestinian people. The Islamic Republic of Iran should be thanked by Palestinians, Arabs, Muslims, and even nations worldwide for adopting an ethical, humane, and national stance by standing with the oppressed and the vulnerable. However, blame should be placed on those standing with Zionist Israel, which is currently committing genocide. This underscores the credibility of the Islamic Republic of Iran's position. Since Zionist Israel and not the Palestinians are being prosecuted in the International Court of Justice, the Palestinian people are the victims in this equation. South Africa is globally praised, as is Iran and anyone standing on the side of truth for the Palestinians. By the way, according to international laws, Gaza, the occupied West Bank, and Al-Quds are considered territories occupied by Zionist Israel. International law guarantees the right of peoples to self-determination and the right of peoples to snatch liberation from the fangs of any occupation. Now Iran, South Africa, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen stand on the side of those resisting occupation. Blame should be placed on the United States, Britain, and Germany, which support genocide and support Zionist Israel with its killing machinery. Certainly, what the Islamic Republic is doing is a commendable effort from free nations, and it should be a blessed and internationally adopted stance. All peoples and all nations should stand by the just Palestinian cause.
Definitely, Mr. Saleh Abu Azzi, Palestinian political commentator, thanks a million for joining us to talk about the Day of Gaza, which will be held on January 19, especially in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you very much for being with us. Stay tuned, ladies and gents, because we will be talking about the escalation of the United States and Britain on the free and sovereign Yemen.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The U.S. attempt to persuade the Yemenis to allow Israeli entity ships to recross through the Red Sea Strait appears to be one of the most prominent immediate challenges facing the United States of America, which many in this world classify as a superpower. Today, the United States is shocked by the free Yemen and its resilient people, and this is what makes its incitement threats and blatant and illegal military aggression absolutely useless, no matter the advanced weapon it chooses to use. More details in the following report.
The U.S.-British aggression on several Yemeni provinces under the control of the Sana'a government last week failed to achieve any military objectives, turning into a blatant assault on Yemeni sovereignty. These attacks no doubt will have military repercussions that may extend to American bases in the region. Sana'a will be pushed to escalate to the third stage in the Red Sea, where the Yemeni armed forces have set their goals to close the sea to commercial ships belonging to countries attacking Yemen's territories and national sovereignty. Sana'a was aware of the aggression last Friday, according to informed sources, expecting it to happen about a week ago. However, Washington and London waited for the UN Security Council's decision, which U.S. media reported, citing diplomats, that the United States modified its wording to overcome Chinese objections. Then both the U.S. and the U.K. were surprised by the large-scale attack launched by Yemeni forces last Tuesday, considering it an unprecedented insult instead of naming it as it is, a retaliation to the targeting of the Yemeni naval forces, which led to the martyrdom of 10 Yemeni soldiers the week before the last. The U.S. then resorted to a military aggression, utilizing all their media means to propagate misleading information that Yemen is targeting international navigation and trade in the Red Sea. Rather than merely ships heading to occupied Palestine in solidarity with Gaza to ensure the genocide stops and much-needed food and aid reaches Gaza. Hours before the execution of the aggression operation, Washington and London addressed their statements to the American and British publics before addressing the Yemenis, whom they did not urge to exercise caution, ignoring the fact that this people had withstood 270,000 airstrikes without yielding to the Saudi Emirati aggression, acting as proxies for the United States and Britain. Contrary to the expectations of the latter after the operation, which the U.S. Central Command stated was carried out using advanced weapons through about 100 air and missile strikes on several Yemeni provinces, some of which involved Tomahawk missiles launched by submarines, the aggression concluded without achieving any objectives. This marks the first declared military aggression operation by major powers against Yemen, ending in failure and opening the door wide for the Yemeni armed forces to respond forcefully and painfully in the coming days and weeks. It is noteworthy that Sana'a's naval forces initiated a primary response just 7 minutes after the strikes, launching a missile attack on U.S. warships in the Red Sea. Following massive popular protests on the same day, with the participation of millions of Yemenis in response to the aggression, the Supreme Commander of the Armed Forces in the Sana'a government, Mahdi al-Mashat, who serves as the head of the Supreme Political Council, affirmed in a statement reported by official media that the unjustified American Zionist British aggression on Yemen is a violation of all laws, and the countries participating in it will pay a high price.
Now to discuss this issue with us from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, Mr. Talib al-Hassani, political commentator. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Mr. Talib. Now, Sana'a has been anticipating a comprehensive Western war on Yemen since the first attack it launched against Israeli entity navigation in the Red Sea, specifically ships going to the Zionist Israeli entity, since that was very clear back then for the Yemeni leadership that there will be some sort of retaliation by the West. Why did they choose to proceed with this plan of theirs?
Greetings to you. I believe there are three backgrounds for taking this decision. The first background is the religious dimension and religious responsibility, especially given the fatwa from the Association of Yemeni Scholars and before that, the position of Sayyid Abdul Malik Badruddin al-Houthi. The religious background is a significant factor in many decisions related to domestic affairs and even foreign policy. The second issue is aligning with the axis of resistance within the unity of battlefields in confronting the Israeli Zionist enemy. This commitment cannot be ignored, particularly in the face of a heinous aggression and an unprecedented siege on Gaza. The third issue is the popular will, the popular support, the large and confident popular mobilization and internal national unity standing behind the political and military leadership. There is also military readiness. Even if there were other backgrounds without military readiness and military preparedness, I believe there would have been a different stance. But ultimately, military readiness is the foundation for this Yemeni position.
Mm-hmm. Well, amid the growing reactions, both popular and political, inside of Yemen, and in the media as well, supporting Yemen's closure of navigation against the Israeli entity and rejection of the American and British aggression, obviously, on Yemen. What do you think the upcoming Yemeni approach will be in the event that the foreign aggression continues? Because we did see it continuing over the past days with the cohesion of the Yemeni forces despite their national differences.
I believe that facing off with the United States and how Yemen's response is already predetermined, the nature of Yemen's response was defined as outlined by Sayyid Abdul Malik Badruddin al-Houthi in response to the threats. The recent military action by the United States and Britain, and possibly its continuation, albeit with reduced intensity, was preceded by clear threats. Therefore, Sayyid Abd al-Malik Badr al-Din al-Houthi predetermined the nature of the response, stating that any aggression or attacks on Yemen will be met with a direct military response targeting three arenas. The first arena includes American interests in the region, especially in the Red Sea, encompassing various interests. The second arena targets American naval navigation and consequently British navigation, as Britain is a partner in the military aggression against Yemen. This will lead to an expansion of targeting in the Red Sea, including American and British commercial ships passing through this passage. The third arena includes military ships and naval bases on the African side of the Red Sea, which are numerous, ranging from the Djibouti to Eritrea to some islands near Somalia. This is the response arena. This will result in many consequences in the Red Sea, as currently discussed, with shipping companies being uneasy about passing through this area. Consequently, the United States has failed to achieve its declared primary goal, which is protecting Zionist Israeli entity ships. Zionist Israeli ships are now prohibited from passing and will not pass in the future. The second goal is that America aspires to reduce Sana'a's military capabilities, which is not possible and cannot be achieved because Yemen is in a state of war with a fundamentally different military situation. Yemen lacks visible military camps, military bases, or visible weapon depots. All these complexities add challenges for the Americans. Therefore, Yemen's response in this significant arena will strike the interests of the United States and Britain. The escalating effects in the Red Sea region have already begun, with the rising costs of maritime shipping and fuel prices increasing due to the disruption of fuel supplies. Approximately 6 million barrels of oil passing through this region. Even Qatari liquefied gas is affected, as four Qatari liquefied gas carriers have halted passing through this area today. Consequently, America has not achieved its objectives, but Yemen in return has achieved many goals, including reducing exports in this region.
Definitely, what you're saying will have a direct military effect on the situation in the region around Yemen, but it also will affect the political scene inside of Yemen. How do you think that will affect the Yemeni-Saudi peace process that has been stalled for the past 2 years, but it is actually there? How will that be affected?
Certainly, both Saudi Arabia and American convictions suggest that the war in Yemen, led by the Saudi coalition, is not progressing in the direction they desire. Halting the war, ceasing military operations, and partially lifting the blockade were primarily in the interest of both the United States and Saudi Arabia. Therefore, the current escalation has not impacted the airspace at Sana'a International Airport or maritime navigation to the ports of Hodeidah. This serves as a gauge for the continuation of negotiations and commitment to a political solution. Ultimately, Yemen will not link the political solution to its duties regarding the Palestinian cause and Gaza. When Yemen made the decision related to Gaza, there was a conviction that if the political solution were affected, it would not be compromised for the sake of the Palestinian cause. In reality, there will be no significant impact, and I believe that the absence of Saudi Arabia from the coalition formed by the United States, at least officially and explicitly, is beneficial for the continuation of the political solution. Even if Saudi Arabia desires to see Yemen defeated in this battle, its absence from the coalition is also favorable for the political solution to persist. Before the aggression, the United States claimed that a political solution in Yemen will be guaranteed, even one better than what Yemen aspires to achieve if it ceases support for Palestine. However, this proposition was categorically rejected within Yemen. Hence, the political solution will continue for reasons related to American interests and the inability to sustain their war against Yemen.
Mr. Talib al-Hassani, political commentator all the way from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, we thank you very much. We support you. We support your cause. We support your people. Victory, inshallah, for Yemen and for Palestine and for the entire resistance axis in our region. I want to thank you very much, ladies and gents. We promise you to give you always the latest updates from the region of West Asia. We'll be seeing you again next week on the Mideast Stream. Assalamu alaikum.
in the limelight. A planned Republican primary debate in New Hampshire on Thursday, 18th of January, has been cancelled because the candidates have refused to participate in the debate. And former President Donald Trump has coasted to a strong victory in Monday's Iowa caucus. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The Republican presidential debate that was expected to happen on Thursday, 18th of January, just days before the New Hampshire primary, has now been cancelled after the candidates were unwilling to participate in the debate. Our intent was to host the debate coming out of the Iowa caucuses, but we always knew that would be contingent on the candidates and the outcome of the race in Iowa. As a result, while our robust election coverage will continue, ABC News and WMUR-TV will not be moving forward with Thursday's Republican presidential primary debate in New Hampshire, an ABC News spokesperson confirmed in a statement on Tuesday, 16th of January. Former President Donald Trump finished in first place in the Iowa caucuses on Monday, with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis coming in second, and Nikki Haley, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, placed third, according to CBS News projections. Nikki Haley argued that her performance in Iowa makes the primary campaign a two-person race between her and Donald Trump,